Is it fair to say Keane Lynch is your hurler of the year?
I just say, Keane, here's the trophy. That's it. I wouldn't even give three names. I just say Keane Lynch is hurler of the year. And like, it was so good, give it to him next year.
OTB AM, live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
Okay, delighted to welcome Bellator fighter Brian Moore to the show. Brian, how are you getting on?
Getting on great. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So at the end of last month, you had a pretty big win at the Forum in Inglewood, California. An iconic venue, an iconic enough win, I think, in the trajectory of your own career. Talk us through that brilliant night for you.
Yeah, it was a great night. It wasn't the fight that we had planned for, but you know, we put a lot of work in. It was actually completely the opposite of what we had planned for. We had planned and prepared for a karate-based southpaw and a guy who likes to wrestle, and I was given a tall, orthodox, kind of an awkward but still very good guy with a good record, but we just adapted to it and overcame and put on a good performance. So I was very happy with it. But actually fighting in the Forum, just going back to that, it's funny because one of the guys who I studied for my fight, I always pick fighters to study, and someone who I always keep going back to is Triple G, who has such good has such an unblemished record against southpaws. So I was studying him a lot, and the fact that he had fought in the Forum, along with, of course, Muhammad Ali and Julio Cesar Chavez. So just to share the same arena they once did was just unbelievable.
So you go to Golovkin quite a bit when you're studying or preparing for a fight?
Yeah, so for instance, Golovkin has, like I said, an unblemished record versus southpaws, and he's fought quite a few southpaws, but also always has looked phenomenal against. If you look at someone like Mayweather, obviously he's undefeated, but his hardest fights were against southpaws. Canelo is another good example, has a good record against southpaws, but you know, against Billy Joe and Lara, he didn't perform at his best early on. So, but if you study someone like Triple G, who has a fantastic record against southpaws, and I was fighting a southpaw, I wanted to see what he was doing well and be able to replicate it.
What do you pick up from watching him, and what do you take from Triple G that you applied on the night?
So his pressure, he makes himself a lot bigger than he actually is. So physically, he will demand the cage, and he'll put the southpaw on the defense while they're trying to go with their left hand. But he meets them first with a jab, and then he'll get his right hands going. When they start shelling up and they're not as loose, then he starts bringing in his left hook. So like he just systematically breaks them down. But it's his presence and his and his cage control, or his ring control, or ring craft, that is so that works so well against the southpaw. And plus, a lot of people say that if you're fighting the opposite stance, you should use the rear hand a lot. He's a great example of someone who uses his jab with a lot of success against the southpaw. So he's phenomenal to watch.
And is your background boxing, Brian, or is mixed martial arts, has it always been your first love when it comes to combat sport?
I started MMA when I was 21. I was in college in my final year, and I'd become a fan of it. I watched an old UFC, and I remember studying for my final exams, and I was so bored, and I was like, right, I'm going to just take this up. I'd been begging a guy to come with me, you know, so I wouldn't be going by myself, and he had kind of kept putting it on the long finger. So one day I just decided, right, I'm going to start it. And I started Muay Thai, and I'd done it for like a couple of weeks until college finished, and then I started straight into MMA. So I don't really have a background as such. I started as a fan and just started doing all styles straight away.
It's just interesting, considering you've mentioned so many boxers there that you've taken inspiration from. So I guess it was just you were, I guess, drawn into combat sports in general without having any specific interest in one, or having a hierarchy of one over the other at the start, at least.
I was a fan of boxing from when I was a small child. I still remember, right. And I was begging my parents to bring me boxing, but I live in the middle of nowhere, so the closest town was like 30 minutes. You know what I mean? And I had a GEA training. I had a GEA field and a soccer field that was less than a 2-minute walk. So, you know what I mean? It was hard for them to do it. Now, they did bring me boxing, but the next week I broke my arm playing hurling and never went back. So I only started combat sports really when I was 21. But I always kind of say, oh, I wish I had started, but I actually don't. You know, I never had to take any headshots, any head trauma, till I was in my early 20s, until the brain is fully developed as such. And I think that has stood to me. And I don't know what path I'd be on right now if I had started early. Maybe I would have got sick of it. Maybe, I don't know. I know where I am. I'm very happy, very fortunate. So I don't like to dwell, you know, in the past too much.
Was there a steep learning curve, though, when it came to some of the basics of the sport?
Absolutely. But funnily, because I was such a fan of it, I felt like I could pick it up quite quick. I remember the first spar I ever done, we were only allowed to throw jabs. But I mean, it's like I had taken a drug. I felt so unbelievable. You know what I mean? I felt like it was a real calling. But it was a steep learning curve. I remember so well. I remember like this was yesterday. I was an amateur and I hadn't properly sparred before. So this was my first ever spar. I'd done a couple of positional ones where we were just jabbing. And very light. But the first ever spar I'd done was against a world kickboxing champion, Vinny DiRusio. I don't know if that rings a bell, but I had heard so many stories about Vinny. And when I went to spar him, I didn't know who he was. And he beat the shit out of me. He didn't go handy at all. And when I bump into him in Kilkenny here and there, maybe on a night out, I always say it to him, but he's such a nice guy. But he fucking wasn't nice that morning. That was my first ever spar. And that was a steep learning curve. But I'm glad it happened because it made me open my eyes to a lot of things. And I think maybe that's why I'm so obsessed with striking now. I never wanted to feel like that again. And I put in the work where I haven't felt like that again. You know what I mean? So, but I'm not going to thank Vinny for it, but I do remember it.
When you say there that sparring is like a drug, can you explain to people like me why it's like a drug? What exactly you're feeling in that moment?
It doesn't feel like a drug now because it's what I do. I make my sparring feel as real as I can to a fight. I try and mimic the same speed. I don't try to use as much power like I would in a fight, but I try to make myself like unbelievably nervous as I would be before a fight. So when I'm going up and I'm driving up in the car on the way to Dublin, I try and mimic the nerves that I feel. I talk to myself like it's going to be a fight. And I'm a 10-year veteran now, 21 fights in, and I still get nervous before sparring because of that. Because I don't want it to be different in a fight. But back then, when I just started this sport and we would get into, you know, light spars or even technique, it felt like a drug because it was something I longed to do for so long, and now I was finally doing it and just give you like an insane high. I had played sports since I was 5 competitively. I was good. Like I played intercounty GAA, played a good level of soccer, even had a good golf game. But I never, you know, experienced what I experienced in those first couple of spars. Remember the first spar I done? I quit GAA. I quit everything after doing it for 16 years. Just stopped there and then because I wanted to chase that again and again and again.
And were you playing with Wexford at that point when you like you were a county? Or was it underage star you were, Brian?
I was under 17 and under 18 for football and like under 14 for hurling. But I played very well under 17. I was the free taker for Wexford as well. And then under 18, I was on the panel and on the fringes of the team, kind of on and off the team. But I played a good high level. And then the club that I was with at the time, I had a very good outfit for both senior and I was playing for them as well. So it was something that was just kind of bred into me since I was 5. And I do still love GAA, but as soon as I came across martial arts, that was it. That was the end of it.
Was there ever any temptation on the GAA side of things about the status of being a county minor to draw you back into the sport, to stop you from hanging up the Wexford jersey, as it were?
Not really. I do have to admit, when I was, you know, a teen, what people thought of me mattered. While now I couldn't give a rat's ass what people think of me, only my family and like as long as I'm not doing anything, you know, crossing the line as such. But I remember when I was that age and when I did move into martial arts, like a lot of my friends that were teammates of mine in GAA, we lost touch, we lost contact. A lot of them had a lot of strong words to say about the decision that I made. But I stand by the decision to this day. And thankfully, I've made friends with a lot of these guys since. Some of them haven't. But it's the decision I made. And I followed my heart. And I'm here today as a professional athlete, you know, making a living with this. And I'm very happy with the decisions I made.
It's turned out pretty well, to say the least. What sort of things would they be saying to you when you left?
Just the, like I remember one guy said, I think you're crazy, you know. One guy called me an idiot. I just remember it so clear. But I don't really blame them back then. Well, I do and I don't. Back then, even now, I'm going to be honest with you, a lot of people that it's not grown as much as I have, as it has in other parts of the country, like in Wexford. There's like today, I'm the only professional mixed martial artist in the county, which is, I think, a bit, I think it will come. And there's a lot of good martial artists. And I think if they just crossed into different disciplines, it would become more of a regular thing. But back then, it was just such a new thing. People didn't know what the hell I was doing. They didn't know whether I was doing Taekwondo or Tai Chi or Strongman. They didn't know what I was doing. They didn't know what MMA was. And, but, you know, we're here now. I remember the first MMA show that was in Wexford. Me and two friends were on it as amateurs. And like people couldn't fucking believe what they were witnessing, you know what I mean? So
that is something you've tapped into quite a bit during your mixed martial arts career, the pride of being the only fighter from County Wexford. And even like I've seen pictures of you in the GEA jersey, and I think you have a 1798 tattoo as well. Like this is something you've really tapped into as part of your own identity.
Yeah, I'm a very, very proud Wexford man. It's hard not to be. I was obsessed, I still am, with the 1798 Rebellion. I know all the songs. I was made sing them in school, you know what I mean, by myself, all this kind of stuff. I live in Banno, which is where the 1169 invasion of the Normans happened. I'm surrounded by 1798 battlefields. It's very hard not to be, you know, surrounded by it and take a lot of pride in it. And I choose to fight. These men and women were forced to. So when I think of how brave they were, doing what I do, even though I get very nervous and whatnot, is you know, it's handbags compared to what those people were forced to do. But I take a lot of pride being a Wexford man and a fighter from Wexford.
Was it really in school where that interest in history sparked, or were there family links or any other influences?
Both. My mother and my auntie, for instance, used to sing PJ McCall songs such as Boule Vogue and Kelly the Boy from Clan. PJ McCall was obviously he's dead a very, very, very long time, but his cottage was situated in the parish where I was born. So there was strong links from the family side of things. But in school also, you know, we would have learned all the rebel songs, like 1798 songs, like Boule Vogue, for instance. And it just stayed with me. I know a lot of people, a lot of friends, a lot of family don't really, they're not that interested in it, but it's something that's just always stayed with me. And then the more you delve deep into like the individuals involved in the rebellion, the more interesting it becomes, you know what I mean? There's so many brilliant stories about it.
And your nickname is the Pikeman. I presume that's also a nod to the rebellion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like that's where most of the rebellion took place in County Wexford. It was at its strongest in Wexford, so yeah. And it was a pretty obvious nickname given at the end of it.
It's really interesting. I know that we started here talking about the form in England, and we've got kind of thrown off course here massively, but I do want to go back to that because that in itself is just a really interesting confluence of events, really. Jordan Finsky, the guy you ended up fighting in the end, you mentioned how you had to dig down into the style you were up against. But what makes that even more fascinating is that he wasn't the first or the second opponent you were due to fight in California.
Yeah, when I arrived in, I didn't have an American SIM card, so I didn't have data or anything like that. So when I literally arrived at the hotel, I put in my Wi-Fi, went up the stairs, and as I put my key card in the door, like ding, 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 my whole phone starts just going crazy. The people messaging, like my wife messaging how I landed, etc. But John's messages start coming up, my coach, and all I could see was Scoggins, COVID, out, and then like a Tapology record of the next opponent. I was like, shit, okay, let's take a breath now and have a look. But I was offered a guy, he was 20 wins, 5 losses. He was ranked number one in Japan, number two in Russia. And we said yes. And then he pulled out. So in stepped Jordan Winsky. But I said it to one of the Bellator guys. I goes, if you're replacing this guy, I goes, don't give me some scrub, some guy who's going to step in with a poor record. Give me someone good. And Winsky had beaten two former UFC fighters. He has a good record. He was 11-2, experienced, good wrestler, good striking. So I was happy to take that challenge on, you know.
There was also an opportunity for you to not fight and take the money, but not only did you want to fight, you wanted to fight the best possible opponent.
Yeah, I'm the luckiest man in the world to have the family that I have. So being away from them takes a lot of dedication, a lot of sacrifice. And I'm not giving up all that time and effort to go and sit in a stand in Inglewood and look at people fighting after me putting in that effort. So I was there for one reason and one reason only, and that was to fight. So I could have took half my purse and my show money and sat there and enjoyed it, but I wouldn't have enjoyed it. I would have been only, my mind would have been racing of the ifs and whens, and you know, so I'm really happy to have performed and won that night.
What are the medium-term objectives then, Brian? I know that there is obviously a Bellator card slated for Dublin in November. Fingers crossed there'll be a full Irish crowd for the first time since, what was it, February last year in the Three Arena. Even beyond that, what have you got your sights set on?
My goal is the gold belt, and never have I felt more confident. It's funny, because 21 fights, this is my 21st fight, and I looked back at my performance, and I was very happy with it. First time ever. Maybe I'm getting a little bit easier on myself. I don't think so, the way I push myself in training, but I could see that, you know, I could see the work that I'd put in had went on and had done very well. And I really think that I can beat any man at 135 pounds in the world. I really do think that UFC, Bellator, whatever it is, but I'm rooted in Bellator now. I'm very, very happy. I don't want to be anywhere else. And I really want to get that gold belt. And I think I beat any of them on my day. And with the dedication, the time, the focus, the effort, etc., I feel like I'm only coming into my prime. I think I beat all of them.
How much of a slight on you was it when the Bellator fighter rankings came out for the bantamweight division and you weren't included in the top 10 challengers?
Yeah, look, I'm not surprised in a sense, and I am surprised in another way. That was a, you know, that was a great performance I put on. I shut the guy out from start to finish, was never in any bother. I made it an exciting fight. And I beat a guy with a really good record, 11-2 he was. So to go out and beat him 30-26, dominate him, and not be ranked ahead of guys who were 5-2 and 6-0 and who haven't really fought anyone, it annoyed me. But I used that opportunity to call out one of these guys in the rankings. I simply said, cool, if you think that this guy is beat better than me, you have him ranked ahead of me, okay, make him fight me. And we'll see then how true these rankings are. And I'm not the only one at bantamweight that should be ranked. There's other guys too. There are other really good 135-pounders that should be ranked without a doubt there. And in other divisions, other guys should be included in the rankings. I don't know which way they're working the criteria, but it doesn't make much sense in my eyes and many other people's eyes too.
We should say as well that these aren't like official from Bellator rankings, that they are writers around the game. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, there's like 14 journalists, right, that were selected. A lot of people who were asked didn't do it. So it's these guys and they're putting the rankings together. It's funny because I wasn't ranked and then I was. And then I was taken off the rankings with inactivity. And then after a great performance like that, wasn't put back in. But look, at my goal is this, and it's you asked me about goals. My goal is to win every fight, and the more I win, the less people can ignore me. And I've had that mindset now for the last about five fights. You know, people are talking about a 3-fight win streak that I'm on. Technically, I think it's a 5-fight win streak. You know, I broke my hands in that fight where I was clearly winning. If I hadn't broken the two of them, I was winning. I was even winning when it was just one. So since I've made that switch of just winning every fight and don't worry about everything else, just if you win, everything else will look after itself in regard to rankings and title contention and belt, and it's working.
So you mentioned the guys who are 6-0 and 5-2. Jornel Lugo is 6-0. Cass Bell is 5-2. They're ranked 8th and 9th respectively on that rankings. I presume you would fight either of those in Dublin this autumn and beat either of them in Dublin.
There's only one man who I wouldn't fight on them rankings, and that's my teammate, James Gallagher, and everyone else is fair game. Everyone else is fair game. I'll fight number 1 to number 10, no problem, and outside that either. I'm the kind of guy, and I'm not just saying it, I fought anybody, anytime, anywhere. You look at my two fights in Dublin, they were both short notice fights against top 5 in the world. So fighting one of these guys, no problem. You know what I mean? I called for Cass Bell. I've called for Jornel Lugo before. I don't know how much more calling I need to do, but at the end of the day, give me any of these guys, any of them.
The thing is as well that Bellator realized the unbelievable power of a home fighter in that arena with fans there. Like, I was there in the last event they had. It feels like kind of like a couple of weeks only before the pandemic last year, last February. And the home crowd feeling in that venue is absolutely incredible when it's packed to the rafters, that there is a huge value in what you would bring to proceedings. And it could be an even more seismic moment for your career were you to win in that venue this year.
I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, I'm not 100% sure whether I'll be fighting in Dublin or not. Because I've just had a fight and there's a lot of other guys to fight.
Right.
A lot of Irish guys that are under contract and whatnot. But I think it would be a huge shame if I wasn't. I'm on the crest of a wave. I really genuinely think that I'll be fighting for a title very soon. And I think it will make it for a great homecoming. Like, and I've stepped up when no one else has on two occasions to save shows in Dublin. Once against AJ McKee when I was sick, once against Daniel Boichel on very short notice, making my Bellator debut. So I really think that I should be included in this Dublin show, but not just for those reasons. It's for the reason that I'm on a tear at the minute, and I'm going to continue that, and this could set up something huge. And the last thing I'll ask, my inbox has not... is gone bananas from Wexford that are supporting me, that want to get behind me, that are wanting to travel to the Tree Arena. The place will be covered in purple and gold, I'm sure of that, if that was the case. So I'm hoping Bellator will put me on it. I think it's more than deserving, to be perfectly honest.
They'll be dancing at the crossroads if you get the job done in the Tree Arena. Just one last thing, Brian, how do you then handle that over the next little while? Just that little element of uncertainty. Do you have... I don't know, a default training program now after you're fully rested up, or how does it work?
I have a default mode, and that's hard work. I go back to training. That's my thing. People have their thing. People go golfing on the weekends. People, you know, whatever, listen to music, do whatever. I train. I love training. I took last week off and it was hard. I went back training yesterday and it was easy. I love it. You know, and I'm not just saying that, but, you know, I built a gym right beside my house there so I could do even more training. I'm obsessed with it. I'll do it till the day I die. I just love training. So that's default mode. And going back to study fighters like we talked about at the start of this, like Golovkin, like Sugar Ray Robinson, Roy Jones Jr., like Damian Maya, like these guys that I look up to, Ben Askren, looking at these guys and taking technique and trying to put it into my own game. So I'll just go back to default mode, and that's hard work.
Brian, it's been fascinating catching up with you and getting to know your story really actually today. We really wish you all the best over the next little while. It's going to be a very, very interesting few months for you, hopefully. Thanks a million for taking the call.